Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
This is Radio Influence. The future is now.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Dark to Light with Frank and Beans on this Friday, May 18th, 2018. So glad you're with us. We've had an amazing couple weeks. Episode 3 coming at you today. And sadly, my co-host Frank is on vacation. He won't be joining us today. I know. He really does bring a special sort of flair to the show. I'm going to have to do it on my own today, guys. With the bad sound effects and everything. So here we are. I was honored to be on Your Voice America yesterday with Ann Vanderseel. It was fantastic. We talked about Oleg Deripaska. And I think a lot of the people joining us on this show are in different stages of their understanding of this whole Russiagate conspiracy. It is very clear at this point in time that the intelligence community under Barack Obama literally infiltrated Donald Trump's campaign to both attempt to spy on his campaign for information, to compromise him, etc., and to make it so that when he did win, if he did win, it was going to be impossible for him to govern. Now, there's a lot of theories out there on this stuff. A lot of people have different opinions on what's going on exactly, who the players are that are involved. But the story is starting to unravel. The layers of the onion are being peeled back. And today we're going to go over certain things in this story that maybe some of the details haven't made it out yet. And we're going to listen to some clips. I want to touch on this before I get into the piece by John Solomon in The Hill, which was an amazing piece. Joe DeGeneva, he was a former U.S. attorney, was working with Trump to be able to be counsel, ended up not being able to do that, but is now, quote, an advisor, sort of close to the president. From what he says, wife is the attorney, Victoria Tonsig. I think I'm pronouncing her name right. She's the one who was representing the informant in the Uranium One case that was testifying in front of Congress and in front of the grand jury impaneled in the Uranium One case that everybody seems to forget has been impaneled. There's been indictments coming out of Uranium One, guys. Jeff Sessions is not sitting on his hands doing nothing, let me tell you. So his wife was the one who represented that that gentleman. Jeff Sessions, again, removed his NDA so that he'd be able to talk about what he knew. This was a few months ago. I did not know that they were husband and wife. But he appeared on our friend Tucker Carlson's show last night, and I want to play the clip of what he said, and we'll go over it together.
Here, what have we learned? Joe DeGeneva has been taking close notes from day one. He's a former U.S. attorney, of course, one of our favorite guests. He joins us tonight with a recap. Joe, what do we know?
We know that Hillary Clinton was illegally exonerated. We knew that a year ago. We know that there was a substantial effort to frame the current president of the United States with crimes by infiltrating his campaign and then his administration with spies that the FBI had set upon them. We have learned that the crimes were committed by the FBI, senior members of the Department of Justice, John Brennan, Mr. Clapper, Mr. Comey, and others associated with the Democratic Party, and that Donald Trump and his associates committed no crimes.
Can you believe that, what he just said? I never thought that I would ever live through something like this. What he said is all true. That actually happened. Think about the level of complete and utter treason, malfeasance that this FBI, this former administration. Can you just imagine for a second what would have happened if Donald Trump didn't win the presidency? Would have been over. Let's continue.
That's quite a litany. So to the spying question, when the president tweeted that one morning, and I'll never forget it,
yes,
they spied on us from Trump Tower. And I don't think there's a single person who read that who thought, well, that's kind of a heavy duty charge. Can you prove it? And of course, he was derided immediately as insane and as a tinfoil hat guy. That's in effect been proved.
Oh, absolutely. Categorically and unequivocally, it has been proved that the FBI, in violation of all guidelines, all legislation, and I believe they committed crimes in doing so, purposely sent people into the Trump campaign to plant false information, then force that information to be forwarded back to CIA and then funneled to the FBI to be used as false information in FISA applications.
It's true. There were plants, all right. The disagreement comes on who they were and who was involved and who wasn't. I have worked for over a year to show everyone why, and it wasn't only me. There's tons of people that have been doing this in a group with the same passion. I firmly believe that the people attached to these supposed, you know, these alleged spies that I don't even want to say alleged anymore. They're spies. These people knew what they were doing. They knew it. They knew exactly what they were doing. And I think that Papadopoulos, the one who, you know, communicated with Mifsud, the one who met with Alexander Downer in a London bar, the one who supposedly got the information that Clinton was a, well, you know, her, Russia had her emails. I think he knew about it. You want to know why? Because of the overt way that he communicated this information back to the campaign. No, he didn't say, by the way, guys, I have, you know, information that that Clinton's 30,000 emails are available. No, he didn't say that. And before I finish this clip, I want to go through some information that just makes Papadopoulos a very, very, very strange case. In case you guys don't know, you know, news breaks instantaneously on Twitter. I mean, it's rapid fire. It's coming out all the time. Real time, amazing information, amazing investigative reporters, some of them anonymous, undercover, using, you know, code names, using fake names. It doesn't matter. If the information is good, it's good. Some of them have to protect their identity for whatever reason, who knows. But there's one in particular that I want to read through today for you that parallels with a lot of the work that I've done. And it's from Undercover Huber on Twitter, at John W. H-U-B-E-R. Great work coming out of that account. And there is a big problem with the Papadopoulos story. Why didn't he tell anyone about the conservative holy grail, the hacked Hillary emails, except the FBI and Alexander Downer, of course? The former Trump campaign aide Papadopoulos swore under oath these key facts. He met Professor Mifsud in early 2016. Mifsud told him Russia had thousands of Hillary's emails. These come from his statement of offense to the FBI, which was submitted to federal court. So Papadopoulos supposedly tells Downer about this email gathering in a drunken conversation in London in May of 2016. Now, Downer, PM from Australia, sits on it, eventually getting around to telling the FBI about it after he sees the hacked DNC emails being released. From July 31st, the Trump-Russia investigation is on. And by the way, Downer has never gone on the record himself supporting this version of events. He never says he was specifically told about Hillary's emails. The Downer information, though, isn't the sworn statement of offense either. It's not in there, not even as a redacted or a vague statement. For example, like Papadopoulos also told a friendly country national about the emails in London in May. So back to Mifsud. Joseph Mifsud, professor, contacting Papadopoulos. Papadopoulos didn't just meet with him. He emailed him repeatedly. And this is what I'm talking about. Interacted on Facebook Messenger. Spoke to some Russians Mifsud hooked him up with. Spoke on the phone, too. That's a big electronic audit trail that he would have left behind. And Mifsud also denies ever mentioning Hillary's emails to Papadopoulos. Maybe he's lying because he's a Putin spy? Maybe. But that doesn't explain Papadopoulos not asking Joseph Mifsud about them ever again. Not ever. He never again asks Mifsud about those emails. Not even the FBI claims he did it. As a backbencher on the Trump campaign, Papadopoulos was also trying to make himself look important during this time. He tried to leverage his Mifsud contact into showing he could arrange a Trump and Putin meeting and improve ties with Russia. And let me tell you something. I feel like that was by design. I feel like, my personal feelings, Papadopoulos knew exactly what he was getting into. Papadopoulos has ties to the Clintons. Papadopoulos is not some guy that just popped up out of nowhere. He's got ties. Nobodies don't just get meetings with Alexander Downer. The campaign didn't even seem interested in his in these emails. At one point, they deny the poor Papadopoulos reimbursement for travel expenses he incurred without prior approval. He asks for a paid role. He's rejected. Weeks and months go by and no Trump-Russia meeting ever comes close to happening. And in the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence report on Russian collusion that was released last week, we learn that Papadopoulos tried to get reimbursed for the travel that he took overseas to meet with these people from the campaign, and the campaign denied those reimbursements. Can you imagine? Can you imagine what ammo this counter into, you know, this spying campaign would have had if the campaign said, you know what? Reimburse the dude. Now they're paying him to meet with these guys. Can you imagine? They had some smart people, including Jeff Sessions, inside of that campaign. They had some smart people in there. Because if they would have paid, and they talked about it, this will teach him to start to, you know, to stop going out on his own. This will teach him to stop. Here's the problem, though. The dream of finding Hillary's emails, the 30,000 deleted ones, this is the holy grail of dynamite campaign info. Anyone in the GOP or press would rip your arm off to get them, even today. Lowly George is right on the cusp of finding those emails. He tells no one. Why doesn't he ask Mifsud about the emails via Facebook, phone, SMS, or email? Too sensitive? No, he supposedly talks to him over a few glasses of Shiraz. He never asks any of the Russians Mifsud has put him in touch with either. He's trying to get himself noticed by the Trump campaign at the time Trump himself asks Russia to find the missing Hillary emails at a press conference. Trump Jr. is also willing to meet Russians off the back of one sketchy email from a British music producer. We'll talk about that. Why does Papadopoulos never mention the Hillary emails to the campaign? The FBI, Mueller, Congress have virtually all the campaign emails by now. If such an email was there, you can bet shifty Republican Shifty Adam Schiff would have leaked it already. Nothing. Everyone in the GOP watched these. Judicial Watch has filed lawsuits. Congress has issued subpoenas. Hannity ranted on about them almost every night for months. Everyone wants to know what Hillary had bleach bit and hammered into oblivion. Papadopoulos knows someone he thinks is connected high up with the Russian government who actually knows who has the missing Hillary emails. Mifsud. He does nothing with that information. Nothing. Interesting. Halper meets with Papadopoulos too, pays him $3,000, wines and dines like a boy king at London's finest. Halper asks him about the emails. He denies knowing anything. He blabbed to Downer, who was mad at him about some things he had said about David Cameron. The campaign was mad at him too. David Cameron. But he won't tell Halper? Also, no one's acting like Mifsud was really a Russian agent. If this story is true, they should have acted that way. How come Mifsud's not detained in the U.S. in February of 2017? How come no one warns people that he meets? Why is he still being protected in Rome? It doesn't add up. And I don't think that Papadopoulos was innocent. I don't think he knew he was naive to all this. I think he's there. I think he's there as a plant. I think that Manafort's there as a plant. I think that Gates is there as a plant. I think that Page is there as a plant. And I think that Papadopoulos was there as a plant. Because the only reason why, and hat tip to know-it-all, you know who you are. The only reason why Gates and Manafort get into the campaign. And again, this is talked about by Donald Trump Jr. in the 2,500 pages released by the Senate Intelligence Committee. Who, by the way, say that, yes, the Russians did interfere in the election to help Trump. Crazy. I'll go over that, too. So much to talk about. So much. The only reason why Manafort's brought into the campaign at all is because of a delegate crisis. And Donald Trump Jr. testifies to this. I did a 100-tweet thread about his testimony on Twitter, if you guys want to check it out, at Tracy Beans with a Z. The only reason he says why Manafort gets brought in is because he's a delegate expert. And there's going to be a contested convention as per the people in the media, et cetera, so on and so forth. the Republicans are not going to do the right thing with their delegates. They need Manafort to come in and masterfully engineer that. Well, somebody brought the theory up once, and I haven't really spent a lot of time on it, but what would happen if that was done by design? What would happen if the brokers at the top there did that by design? It's just an interesting theory. Anyway, we got off a little bit on Papadopoulos there. Let's go back to the clip of DeGeneva on the Tucker Carlson show.
Everybody involved in that process who knowingly participated committed a crime.
So why aren't they being held to account?
As of today, I understand that a referral for criminal prosecution has been made by Mr. Horowitz to Mr. Huber, who is investigating the FISA leaks, the unmasking, the leaks of the unmasking, and everything we described tonight. Criminal referrals have already been made. And I suggest that Mr. Brennan, who loves to make comment about the process, get himself a good lawyer, not a good writer.
Wait.
Whoa. That's crazy. Wow. Brennan called out by DeGeneva. That was hardcore. Let's listen to the rest.
John Brennan, the NBC News paid consultant?
Yes, NBC News' consultant, the former director of the Central Intelligence Agency, the most partisan hack leader of the CIA in history, needs a very, very good lawyer.
Criminal lawyer.
Yes, criminal lawyer. Oh, yes. He doesn't need a slip and fall lawyer, although he's going to slip and fall. He's going to be in front of a grand jury shortly.
Well, that's news.
Yes, and it's good news.
Justin Genova, there's not a single time you've come on where I don't feel better by the end.
Thank you.
And this is no exception.
The great country feels better today.
The country feels better. That's a story. And I hope that happens. He richly deserves it.
That was crazy. He wouldn't have said that if it weren't true. And it's crazy that he said it. Now, remember, several months ago, we learned that Jeff Sessions, everybody was calling for a special counsel. Special counsel, we need another special counsel. We need a second special counsel for this. Everybody was screaming for a special counsel. And they appoint a special counsel when they feel very, very extenuating circumstances. They report a special counsel when they feel that they're not going to be able to fairly, without a conflict, prosecute crimes within a department. For example, the McCabe OIG report, the INSD was investigating, that's the internal investigative unit in the FBI. They were investigating the leaks to the Wall Street Journal and other leaks. And once Lisa Page decided she was going to sing like a canary, and they realized that McCabe was the one who instructed her to do the leaking to the Wall Street Journal about the Clinton email investigation, the INSD realized we can't investigate our boss. So they turned that investigation over to the OIG Michael Horowitz to do that investigation because there was a conflict. The OIG did the investigation, finished the report on that specific leak only, and then sent it to the Justice Department. The Attorney General of the United States, Jeff Sessions, reviewed it and then referred it for criminal prosecution. About a year ago, maybe a little more, Jeff Sessions, unbeknownst to everybody because there were no leaks, appointed a U.S. attorney, which basically acts in the exact same manner as a second special counsel, to work on the criminal side of what IG Horowitz was doing. So IG Horowitz will do his investigation into the different topics that he's investigating, one of which being the Clinton email investigation, how that was handled, the FISA abuses, how that was handled, and anything else that arises. There's a letter that was written, you know, outlining his scope. He has a U.S. attorney. We learned this about a month or, you know, maybe 2 months ago. We learned this. It was who has a grand jury appointed right now to deal with these criminal issues. So what happens is Horowitz doesn't have prosecutorial power, which is why everyone was saying we need a special counsel, because Horowitz can't prosecute any of these people. Horowitz can't question anybody outside of the department who's left, retired, gone, that he can't pull them back in for questioning. So we need a second special counsel to work with the inspector general to be able to do these things, to do his own investigation. Jeff Sessions had a one up on him, and he said, we've got a U.S. attorney by the name of John Huber, assigned to work with and alongside Michael Horowitz. So Michael Horowitz runs his investigation. As he finds things, he sends them over to Huber. Huber takes them. He can call in anybody he wants in front of the grand jury, this grand jury that DeGeneva was talking about right now. And if you could see his face, he looks very, very happy because Brennan's been squawking around like a bird with his head cut off, running around crazy. So the fact that he just said that's insane. But Huber, like I said, U.S. attorney, full prosecutorial power, can bring in anybody from outside the investigation that's left the government that needs to be questioned, has a grand jury impaneled, proven by Goodlatte on Sean Hannity's show, no less. Let me show you. Hold on. So in this clip, we're going to hear Goodlatte talking to Hannity on March 27th, I believe, about the grand jury.
The email server alone, isn't it expected that you're requesting 1.2 million documents?
Yes. Oh, yes. Very definitely. They know we want everything that the inspector general has, minus the transcripts of grand jury testimony, which we cannot get under.
And he says it right there. Minus grand jury testimony, which we cannot get, which lets us know that there's grand jury testimony. And Hannity, I don't think he realized it. And he kind of glossed over that part. But there's a grand jury impaneled in this. So that makes what's going on in the media even more insane, even more insane. Because the New York Times came out trying to basically run cover for this FBI spying investigation or spying operation that went on inside of the Trump campaign with several players that will be, you know, and they'll be exposed over time now. Over time, they'll be exposed. We'll learn who they are. And they're trying to kind of cushion the public for the inevitable downfall of this. They've spent the past year and we're almost 2 years now about talking about, you know, Trump-Russia collusion. Trump colluded with the Russians. There is absolutely, they tried to get him to collude with the Russians. He did not do it. He refused to do it. Even Don Jr. in his testimony the other day, or that was released the other day, they go over with him the whole entire thing. And it's very clear that he says, you know, we're private citizens. We can't work with you on this Magnitsky thing, the whole setup. Veselnitskaya meets with him, happens to meet with Glenn Simpson of Fusion GPS the day before, that day, the day after. Mm-mm-mm. Just a coincidence, I'm sure, right? Just a coincidence. And there's so much to talk about. And wrapped into the documents that were released the other day, we learn that there were, we knew, but we're learning officially, there were other memos in the fake salacious dossier. There were other memos in there. And one of the memos was written in December of 2016, after the election was already completed. Fusion GPS is being sued in court in London, along with Orbis, the company that Steele works for, Christopher Steele. And some of the documents in that court case were included within the Senate Intelligence Committee investigation. The one where they came out and said that there was, you know, obviously collusion by Russia to influence the outcome of the election with Donald Trump. Crazy. Anyway, in there, we learn that there was this December memo not paid for by Fusion GPS that was given to none other than John McCain. John McCain, who speaks to Sir Andrew Wood from UK intelligence, the UK national security official. And they decide to make the dossier in that memo a national security issue, which kind of blows the official, you know, the quote official UK involvement into this to shreds. Because it comes out in this testimony that what Steele in this court paperwork, which will be linked in the show notes for you guys, what Steele is basically saying is that Steele and Orbis and Fusion GPS, they're saying, Fusion GPS is saying, this memo that was written in December, we have nothing to do with. We wash our hands. We didn't pay for it. We didn't sanction it. We didn't tell him to do it. Orbis is saying, he wrote it. But we told them it was unverified. We didn't know if it was true. And they used it at their own risk. They used from Orbis's own admission, an unverified, possibly untruthful memo that was written way after these documents were commissioned by Fusion GPS in December, after President Trump had already won, to make the dossier an issue of national security for the UK and for who? McCain, Cramer. Amazing. And the memo's available. Who paid Steele for that memo? Which wraps it back into the Senate Intelligence Committee and Adam Waldman and Warner and Deripaska. And we're going to get into that now. So The Hill's John Solomon broke a story on Fox the other day with Hannity and Laura Ingraham. And inside the story, amazing piece. Basically, we get another layer of crazy. Robert Levinson was a former FBI agent who went into basically private life, right? He was retired, working on his own, and the CIA approached him to be a contractor because he was really good at what he did. But the CIA kind of had to keep it under wraps because the people that he was contracted to work for in the CIA didn't want their superiors to know that he was working for them. So it was really kind of a shady thing. He goes off to Iran. He gets taken in Iran and he's a prisoner. Now, the family, the CIA, nobody reports that this is a CIA contractor. They say that he's working on his own. He was working as a private investigator. He went over there to investigate a cigarette smuggling ring. Well, it turns out a few years later in 2013, I believe the AP finally comes out and reports that he was in fact a CIA contractor. And they do so after determining that, you know, the threat to his safety at this point is mitigated by the fact that this information needs to be out there so that maybe they can get this guy back. Causes a big controversy. The family's paid a few million dollars in restitution for what's happened. And to this day, Levinson is still missing. And that brought up a lot of controversy because in the Iran deal, there were several hostages that were basically paid. It said there was ransom paid to get these guys released. So there's several hostages over in Iran that get released through the Iran deal, and Levinson is not released. One of the guys who is released, though, has ties to Levinson, or at least he says he knows where Levinson is. Nobody knew that that gentleman was even in captivity at all, let alone that, you know, he said he was an FBI informant. That's another story for another day. Very tangled, very crazy. All open source, guys. All open source. So we learn in this Solomon piece that Mueller, director of the FBI at the time, in 2009, is trying to get Levinson back and is not satisfied with the way things are going. Goes to a Russian oligarch named Oleg Deripaska. That name should sound very familiar to you guys who have been following along with the story for a while now. So he goes to Oleg Deripaska and he says, listen, we need you to do us a favor. We need you to use your contacts in Iran. He's a huge aluminum magnate, lots of business, $10 billion. He's been having a really hard time getting into the United States due to some supposed ties he has to organized crime, etc. So he gets approached by the FBI. Can you please do us a favor? Can you please work with us to get this gentleman back? He spends $25 million of his own money, and at the very last second, planes on the tarmac waiting to pick up Levinson. The State Department under Hillary Clinton pulls the plug on the deal and decides they're not going to go forward with it. As soon as they do that, Oleg Deripaska loses his ability to come back into the country. This might not all seem related, but I promise you it is. So we now know that Mueller worked with Deripaska. Deripaska, we've been talking about for a really long time. He has ties to John McCain. He has ties to Paul Manafort. He is mentioned in the answer by the government to Paul Manafort's claim that they are outside of the scope of their investigation. He's mentioned as having ties to Oleg Deripaska, which at the time originally made me say, well, if they're investigating Oleg Deripaska, there's a reason. Now, we learned in this Solomon piece that Oleg Deripaska, the same guy that we're talking about here that was working with Mueller to try and rescue Robert Levinson, was approached by the FBI last year or 2 years ago, and he was asked to cooperate in this spying campaign against the Trump campaign. Use that. No, sorry. We learned that. And he basically laughs it off and says, you're crazy if you think that Russia is trying to conspire to get Donald Trump elected. I don't want any part of this. Now, Deripaska offered to testify to the committees. The committees said no. There were conflicting reports. One report said that he had wanted immunity. John Solomon's report says that he didn't want immunity. But where this gets really interesting, especially in terms of the Senate, is that we have one Adam Waldman. Back in the day, after the United States apparently reneged on their deal with Deripaska to let him come into the country, Adam Waldman was hired as a lobbyist to run something called the Endeavor Group. Adam Waldman, who was a U.S. attorney or an attorney inside the Justice Department for President Bill Clinton at the time, Adam Waldman, very hooked into the Democrat machine, the power establishment. Adam Waldman is hired by Deripaska at the time to help Deripaska regain his ability to come into the United States to do business. And at the time he registers the FARA or FARA, whatever you want to call it, the Russian ministry, the defense ministry, writes a letter saying it's really important that Deripaska gets back into the country because there's implications for world commerce if he's not able to do business in your country. So Waldman begins the lobbying efforts for Deripaska all the way back then. So why does this matter? Well, we learn that Waldman is talking to the vice chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee through leaked text messages that we received. And he's talking to Warner, Mark Warner, about brokering some kind of a deal between Deripaska and Christopher Steele through a back channel. Waldman's trying really hard to talk to these guys and get something worked out where Mark Warner can secretly speak to Christopher Steele, author of the dossier. Mark Warner doesn't want to make it official. Christopher Steele wants a letter saying that they want him to come and testify. It doesn't seem like it ever ends up working out. But he's also talking to Warner, again, vice chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, about Oleg Deripaska, the same Oleg Deripaska that Mueller worked with in 2009. So when these text messages leaked out, there was also talk in there about them brokering some kind of a deal for safe passage for Julian Assange. I mean, it was heavy duty stuff. And Jones, the aide to Senator Feinstein. So you're telling me now that this aide, this report that the Senate Intelligence Committee released on Trump-Russia collusion is unbiased and straightforward when they have proof in their documents that they released the other day that the UK was working with United States on an issue of national security that was based off of a December memo and John McCain being involved? Come on. Come on. Really? I'm sorry. How deep does this really go? How deep does it really go? So we've got that. We've got that. Goodness. And some other things, too. So we know that Paul Manafort, who was indicted in the Mueller probe, which some call a witch hunt and others aren't sure really what it is at this point, Manafort was indicted on things that had absolutely nothing to do with Trump and Russia, that had to do with the Ukraine. And Manafort filed a couple of motions to stop the prosecution or remove, you know, make it saying that the special counsel was outside of the scope of their investigation in prosecuting him for those crimes. And there's been a court battle in both Washington, D.C., as well as in Virginia. The Washington, D.C. case was denied, basically. The judge the other day came out and said, sorry, he is within his scope to do this. You're out of luck. The Virginia case was really interesting. The testimony was really interesting, made national headlines. The guy was the judge. I think his name was Ellis. He ripped Mueller for being on a witch hunt, and he demanded to see that memo that was heavily redacted when it was presented to the public through this lawsuit. He demanded to see it. And he said, I have clearance. I can go down into a skiff. I need to see that memo unredacted. And then I will be the judge of whether or not you are within your scope to prosecute Manafort on these crimes. I will decide. And it looks like we've got some news on that. Fox News, 21 hours ago, the federal judge who recently ripped into special counsel Robert Mueller's team has obtained a copy of the so-called scope memo that lays out the parameters of the Russia probe. A court document filed Thursday in United States District Court for the Eastern District of Virginia shows that prosecutors have turned over the memo under seal to U.S. District Judge T.S. Ellis III, Reagan appointee. During a court hearing earlier this month, Ellis demanded to see an unredacted copy of Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein's August 2nd, 2017 scope memo to Mueller outlining the scope of the special counsel's Russia probe that congressional Republicans also have sought. The scope letter is what Rosenstein said is the actual area that Mueller can investigate. Representative Andy Biggs, Republican from Arizona, a member of the House Judiciary Committee, said Thursday on Fox News, he hasn't given it to Congress. I think we're co-equal branches of government. We'd like to see it without redactions. Ellis made news during the May 4th hearing for harshly rebuking Mueller's team, suggesting they're seeking, quote, unfettered power and are more interested in bringing down the president than prosecuting former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort. The special counsel argues that Rosenstein granted them broad authority in his May 2017 letter appointing Mueller to the investigation. But after a revelation that Mueller's team is using information from an earlier DOJ probe in its case against Manafort, Ellis said that the information did not, quote, arise out of the special counsel probe, excuse me, and therefore may not be within the scope of that investigation. We don't want anyone with unfettered power. You will be able to read this article in the show notes. And I don't want to overload you guys, so I'm not exactly sure where we are on time, but the saga continues. The saga continues. Completely, completely crazy world we're living in right now. Absolutely crazy. So I'm going to wrap up this edition of Dark to Light with Frank and Beans, minus Frank for this week. Thanks for tuning in. Please listen to us on TuneIn, Apple iTunes, Stitcher. TuneIn, Apple iTunes, all those great platforms, and on radioinfluence.com. We'll be back next week, guys. Thank you so much. We will talk to you soon.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out radioinfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, radioinfluence.com.